So I'd just like to say that I have no relationships to disclose. I would like to disclose that I'm an Oakland A's fan and a Giants fan, but congrats to all of you as well. So today I'm going to be presenting on our recent examination of what we like to call manufacturing dissent. So looking at both news coverage of the recent policy efforts to, exactly what Stacey's mentioning, add menthol to the list of banned additives, both in the news as well as in the TPSAC proceedings themselves. And this is part of a larger NCI-funded study that the Berkeley Media Studies Group has done in conjunction with the Public Health Advocacy Institute of Northeastern University. So many of you may know Dick Daynard or Mark Gottlieb or many of the fine attorneys they have there, but this is a really exciting joint collaboration that we have been a part of. And just to say one more word, I guess, about our larger investigation, we've looked at the strategic use of personal responsibility, and when I say personal responsibility, I really mean all forms of responsibility rhetoric by the tobacco, food, and beverage industries. And so we look at how they frame the role of consumers and the role of corporations, especially its good citizens, right, corporate social responsibility, as well as the role of government. And really, we've had the opportunity to look at how these arguments have evolved from the 1950s and sort of the origins of the health concerns in the tobacco industry to the rise of concern about childhood obesity and adult obesity and all of the diseases that are associated with that chronic condition. But the reason we looked at the menthol issue is, of course, the issues around equity, around discrimination, and around race and injustice in this country. And so we provide a sort of subset of our larger findings on responsibility. To provide a little bit of context, I'm sure most of this is well known to the audience, but it's important to note that the 2009 Act did a lot of things, right? And I'll just be focusing on what happened in regards to menthol, but when the FDA was given authority to regulate menthol, part of the bill also banned a number of additive flavorings, but exempted menthol from that quite controversially. But the bill also established the Tobacco Products Scientific Advisory Committee, and the first order of business was to hold a series of hearings on the science around menthol. And in 2011, they ruled, of course, that banning menthol would benefit the public's health and did not take a stand on whether or not the FDA should, in fact, do that ban, which, of course, you know, people have debated over whether or not that was sufficient or not. But nonetheless, menthol remains exempted to this day. So in that context, we wanted to look at news coverage for a couple of reasons. News coverage has an important agenda-setting effect. So the issues that end up in news coverage are important signals to the reading public, but especially to policymakers in terms of what issues of public policy are important and which are less so. But in addition to putting issues on the agenda, the way in which news media covers an issue or the way in which they're framed is also very important. So we're able to analyze which arguments are made for and against certain policies to really give a deeper sense of what that coverage looks like and what arguments are being communicated, especially to policymakers and their staff. So how did we go about this? So with our collaboration with the Public Health Advocacy Institute, Berkeley Media Studies Group looked at the news coverage, and we went from when the Family Smoking Prevention Tobacco Control Act was being debated through June 2011, which was just after the TPSAC recommendation. We looked at all of the articles that referred to menthol policy, and we looked at three sets of data. So we looked at national newspapers. We looked at tobacco state newspapers, so that meant the Atlanta Journal-Constitution or the Kentucky Courier. And we also looked at a variety of African-American media. So we looked at both newspapers, such as the Philadelphia Tribune, and we also looked at blogs, such as TheRoot.com, which is put out by the Washington Post. And the Public Health Advocacy Institute looked at all of the public submissions to TPSAC. So they were looking at the Center for Tobacco Products website, and it's definitely including people's testimony in this room. And so we really appreciate the fact that all of these materials were made available, so reports, letters, emails, as well as the scientific presentations, so the PowerPoints that have been uploaded to the website during that year's time. So what did we find? So what we're looking at here is the news data. And now this is the article-level data, and we'll talk about the specific arguments in a minute. But in terms of the amount of news coverage, we found approximately 200 articles. And what we're looking at is broken out by the three types of news media that we analyzed. And what the colors refer to are the stances of the articles vis-a-vis banning menthol. Right. And so in the national newspapers, I think it's sort of expected that the majority of the coverage included both arguments for and against, right? I mean, the sort of convention of journalism. I should say that we looked at op-eds, letters to the editor, and the straight news coverage, but the majority was the straight news coverage. And so, of course, you know, objectivity dictates that articles were going to include arguments both for and against. And even though it was a small percentage, there was a bent toward favoring a menthol ban. And if we look at the tobacco state newspapers, I think the only thing of note here is that, honestly, most of the coverage did include arguments both for and against, but, of course, slightly more in favor of maintaining the exemption. And in African-American media, it was almost evenly split between the three, although it's important to note that because we included blogs here, it's sort of expected that we would find more opinionated coverage. But it was a highly divisive topic within that set of media. Now, compared to this, what we found in terms of the submissions to TIPSAC, so overall we're looking at 71% in the news were mixed, 71% were mixed, 16% were in favor, and 13% were against at the article level, so the sort of predominant arguments in each article. Now, compared to that, we found that the submissions, actually 47% were opposed to a ban. 34% were in favor, and only 19% were mixed. So it was a dramatically different proportion in terms of the TIPSAC proceedings, and it shows the level of industry influence and their allies during those convenings. So if that's what the article-level data look like overall, now this is a set of time series data, so I'm sorry if this is a bit small to see, but now what we're looking at is the number of arguments present, so not the number of articles, but the number of arguments present in the news. And the blue, again, is arguments in favor, and the red is arguments against. And so we'll sort of take a moment to really appreciate what happened here. So during the debate over the Family Smoking Prevention and Tobacco Control Act, public health advocates carried the day in terms of having the majority of arguments in the news coverage, sometimes quite dramatically. And so it's clear success in terms of the agenda-setting function of public health advocates getting their message out in the news only a couple of months in April and in August, were there more arguments against banning menthol than those in favor. But at the same time, the overall volume of argumentation was fairly low. There was certainly a lot of debate going on in the news, and not all of it centered on menthol. But as we look through the course of the policymaking proceedings, you know, when we look by 2010, in March when TIPSAC was convened, and throughout 2010 into March, very dramatically in March 2011, we now start to see that both the volume dramatically increases as well as the balance. So now industry speakers and their allies are putting out arguments in greater volume opposing a ban on menthol, including when TIPSAC released its recommendation in March 2011. And then we find a couple of months at the very end in which public health advocates basically continue to trumpet the fact that TIPSAC had recommended that a ban on menthol would, of course, benefit the public's health, but the FDA has yet to take that up. So if that is what the data look like laid out in terms of time, now let's examine what the actual arguments were in the news. And we've split these out into the frames or the arguments that were evoked to support, to oppose, and those that both supported and opposed the ban. And so what we found in the news was that the public health advocacy community focused on the argument that the FDA had established for action, which was that a ban would improve the public's health. And as you can see, the balance of arguments in terms of in favor of a ban actually were quite different in the news and in the scientific proceedings. And so in the news, almost all of the weight was upon this health message, which interestingly was not as nearly as much the case inside the proceedings. And so we can see that there were a variety of other arguments that were made, two of which focused on issues of equity. So the tobacco industry targeting the African-American community. A lot of this referred to the distribution of free cigarettes, the labeling of cigarettes as fun, the development of brands invoking black community identity, especially reaching out to young African-Americans, was much more prevalent in the scientific proceedings as a portion of the arguments. We also saw the concentration on the unique health harms of menthol, which Stacy just outlined, as well as the contribution to health disparities, so the focus on the heightened morbidity and mortality among African-American smokers. In terms of anti-ban frames, we saw many arguments made by allies cultivated by the tobacco industry. So now we're talking about arguments suggesting that there would be a contraband market. We heard this from the National Association of Black Law Enforcement Executives, from the National Black Chamber of Commerce, from the Congress of Racial Equality, CORE, a civil rights organization that has now been motivated to make arguments against the ban. And this was the predominant argument made in all three time periods. We also saw the industry and its allies trying to argue that a ban would lower revenues, both for their own sales, but as well to limit the ability of states to raise funds through tobacco taxes. And, of course, the industry argued that this would take away choice, quite paternalistically arguing that this was going to limit the freedom of smokers to have their menthol cigarettes. And as what comes as no surprise, although I suppose it is a surprise if we were to take seriously what the tobacco industry says behind closed doors in their confidential documents, that they both disputed the health harms of menthol cigarettes compared to all cigarettes, as well as trying to undermine the scientific validity of the studies, claiming the health dangers of those products. Now, we're going to see a couple of quotes, but I think it's very interesting to look at the frames that were evoked by both sides of the debate. And the most prominent of these was the argument around discrimination. So in the news, as well as, although much less, in the TTIP proceedings, we saw an argument around the role of a menthol ban being discriminatory. And we saw this argument both evoked to suggest that the exemption was discriminatory, as well as that a ban would be. And we saw the same thing in terms of usage. So in the news, we saw a few arguments arguing that because of the disproportionate use of menthols among African-American smokers, that this was justification for the ban. And we saw the exact opposite argued by the industry and its allies during the proceedings. But I think this really shows the sort of way in which frames can become contested. So if we look at the discrimination example, we see first from Dr. Louise Sullivan the evocation of discrimination to support the ban. Right? So if we're banning things like clove and peppermint, then we should ban menthol. If this doesn't happen, this bill will be discriminatory against African Americans. Yet Nigel Innes of CORE argued that if the government is not going to ban all cigarettes, then the obvious question is why it should selectively ban those cigarettes that African Americans tend to prefer. Yeah, and this wasn't the only way in which this argument took place. This was an active frame contest. So after CORE started to get this message out, it was also taken up by the public health advocacy community. So John Payton of the NAACP Legal Defense Fund argued that the industry's evocation of this frame was so hypocritical, it's unbelievable to call into question this in terms of the right to choose. Right, so this issue of equity and discrimination was one of the most controversial and contested that we saw during this debate. But in terms of who spoke, I think it's also important to break down not just what was said, but who was saying it. And I think some of these are really illustrative. So we saw that during the news, that medical and public health authorities, as we saw in the time series data, that they were really effective in being a prominent speaker. Industry was only 19% of the news coverage. And just to let you know, non-attributed means journalists, right? So there's arguments made by the authors of, by the journalists writing the news articles, so of course we wouldn't see any of those during TPSAC. But basically, we saw medical and public health authorities really being very effective in getting their message out. And to a greater extent in the news coverage during the TPSAC proceedings, as well as in the TPSAC hearings themselves, the industry became a more and more prevalent speaker. And I think what also is of note here is to look at special interest groups, which is sort of a catch-all term. We haven't yet come up with a good label for this, so I'm interested to know folks' thoughts. But in terms of the advocacy community, we're looking at the National African American Tobacco Prevention Network, at the aforementioned NAACP, the American Legacy Foundation, as well as the anti-ban speakers such as CORE, NOBLE, which is the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives, Chamber of Commerce, and other groups that were leveraged by the industry. And it was in this area where we saw the most amount of disagreement, right? So obviously there's very few types of speakers who were really leveraged to make arguments both for or against the ban. So in short, what we found was that advocates need to maintain a public presence during private scientific proceedings. So the success that the public health advocacy community had during the passage of the Act was unfortunately not sustained throughout this process, and that our take on the time data at least shows that the advocacy community put, you know, its emphasis on TPSAC, which of course makes sense. That's, you know, the process moved inside the FDA and inside TPSAC. But that doesn't mean that the public health community can neglect the important role of the news as an agenda-setting arena and ability to get the message out, especially because the industry continued to do this. The industry got all of a number of editorials and opinion pieces written by a lot of the speakers that I've mentioned, so Niger Innes and all the other speakers that spoke, especially in terms of African-American organizations, and those oftentimes were syndicated. And it was incredibly frustrating as a researcher to see how many times they got these articles printed in the news, because their message was oftentimes repeated on many occasions during the TPSAC proceedings, and we kept seeing these same arguments about the black market denying the health harms and the denial of choice. And we simply didn't see that same amount of argumentation take place from the public health community. At the same time, our final conclusion was that the health message, it really isn't enough, and we mean two things by this. The first thing we mean is, of course, in the news we saw that the predominant argument favoring a ban was the public health justification, that that a ban would protect public health. But at the same time, this represents a missed opportunity to connect to the fundamental values around fairness, around discrimination, and around equity that we saw far more often inside TPSAC than we saw in the news. And at the same time, we saw the industry trying to undercut those arguments by defending African Americans' right to smoke menthols. But in terms of the health message, we mean not only to broaden it beyond arguments about health, but also to remember that health and messaging cannot carry advocacy on its own, that the context for messaging has to be taken into consideration as well. And so that means the capacity to train speakers, to have strategic consultation, and to really build an organizational capacity to have an effective communication strategy in the news, and to execute that needs to take place in order for, you know, the balance to be restored and to really carry the media advocacy strategy necessary for both tobacco control and all issues of public health. Thank you.